Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler, episode 804. Today, the amateur traveler talks about rice paddies and food tours, towering limestone islands, empty beaches, a temple to literature, and the mausoleum for Ho Chi Minh as we go to Hanoi and northern Vietnam. Welcome to the amateur traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about northern Vietnam. I'd like to welcome to the show Paul B. Kennedy from VietnamTravelWithUs.com, who's come to talk to us, coincidentally, about northern Vietnam. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris, and greetings from Hanoi, Vietnam.
And what is your connection with Vietnam?
Well, now I live here. Now I have a business here. But I had left New York one day on a birthday trip, and eventually I just never went back. It's really the long, long story is I kept traveling and with no plans. And when I got to Vietnam, I decided to stay here. And since then, like I said, I opened up a business. I live here. It's my home now.
Excellent.
Instead of moving from New York to New Jersey, I moved from New York to Vietnam.
That's New York to New Jersey is so done.
It's been there.
Excellent. And why should someone come to Vietnam?
It is so amazing. It's gorgeous. This I knew within 15 minutes of being in Hanoi that this was the place I wanted to be. So if I can tell within 15 minutes what this place has to offer, I can tell you right now that this definitely has a place for you to visit. It's one of the few places that is so culturally rich and beautiful. At the same time, the takeaway, the culture, and the things you can learn from it, I think, are beyond words.
Almost which is going to be a problem with a podcast, but
it is because I was going to draw pictures for you, but I'll scrap that plan. It really is. I still have a tough time after almost 4 years of putting into words how great it is here. It's one of those experiences, but you can tell when you get here. It's just culturally rich. Both in color and food, and the natural landscapes are amazing.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
I recommend starting with the lowest number of days that you could possibly spend would be 7 days in Vietnam.
Okay.
I encourage more, but not everyone has the same opportunity. So, and I always, regardless of the number of days, always recommend starting with Hanoi, because Hanoi is pretty much the hub to the best places in Vietnam. Vietnam's divided into essentially three parts, the north, central, and south. The north is mostly the natural beauties and landscapes. It also has a culturally rich Hanoi, which is a city almost the size of New York. The central is mostly man-made, and the south, it's just too hot. And it has the least offer. When I go online, I read about and I hear about people going to and wanting to go to Ho Chi Minh City in the South. I mm-hmm. don't get it. I listen, but there's never a reason. And for me, temperature is a huge part. I'm not a fan of Ho Chi Minh. I lived there for a brief period, a month. It's just way too hot. I'm not a fan of parts of Cambodia or Thailand or if these are outdoor activities, and most of them are, I want to feel comfortable. And I finally moved up from Ho Chi Minh to Hanoi in December and January when it was 95, 100 degrees. Not the heat index, just the thermometer. So it was 110, and that was December and January. That's just too much. Hanoi has a mild four seasons, and I think that plays an important part. But it's also more beautiful and there's more things to do. So I always recommend minimum or maximum always having Hanoi in your itinerary. So for this, I'm starting with 7-day plan.
And what are we going to do in Hanoi?
Hanoi would be the base. Hanoi would be where you would land and where you would leave. In those 7 days, I would include, of course, the street food tour.
Okay.
Because it isn't, that's one of the things that Vietnam's known for is the cuisine. Most of the activities are pretty flexible. I recommend that no matter where you go. So you can move things around so that if you want to spend more time in one area than the other, you can. But I always recommend with the food tour to start out because you never know what time someone's going to arrive. And that one probably has the most flexibility. And from there, the next day.
Wait, before you move on from this.
That's my description, Chris.
What kind of street food am I going to try? Yeah. Does Hanoi have things that it's special for? If I've been to Vietnam, but only in the hot south, am I going to find different things in the north? Or
another part of Hanoi is most of the foods that you're familiar with were invented or developed or created in Hanoi or the north. It's not only three separate regions of north, central, south. They are completely separate areas. Their dialects are strongly enough different that they don't understand a lot of the words or what they're even saying. Surprisingly, the foods are completely different. I always say if there's a dish that was invented or created in a certain part of Vietnam, then that's the part you should try it in. There are exceptions that I've discovered. You know, I can find a good bowl of a dish that was created in Hue. I can find it in, maybe even better, in Hanoi. So there are exceptions.
And what's the dish you're talking about that was created?
Bun Ba Hue.
Okay.
Named after where it was developed. So there are dishes like that I have personally found. But for the most part, the dishes are so different because the dishes are created according to the ingredients in that area. So the dish takes on a whole new life if you try it in a different area. They take the farmer to table method, truly, not too extreme because it's a good thing, but they cook with ingredients that are available to them. So in the central Vietnam, they don't have the same ingredients, so the dish is going to be completely different. I just had someone bring over something I've never had before, but it's from central Vietnam that we would not get here. But that's how it works, is you get to try foods, but it's not like you can go to the local supermarket and try something that was grown in a different region. It's just, you don't see it. You can't get your hands on it.
Well, so with you said that the Vietnam dishes that I'm familiar with are from the north. I'm familiar with pho, and then I'm out.
On me. Spring rolls.
Spring rolls, okay.
Yeah, those are the three famous ones for Vietnam. And those would be part of the street food tour. Everything I do or recommend is always customized. So you may ask what foods you would have or try. I would put those on the list, but the reality is we end up similar to a restaurant, trying to figure out what do you think you want to try, what did you hear about, and you have to customize. You have special dietary restrictions or preferences. Mm-hmm. It's not for me, nor do I recommend. It's never a set, this is the way it is, because that just doesn't work and that doesn't give an experience. And I don't care who it is. I think it should be something that's customized to what you want or what you think you want to try.
What's the one street vendor you love taking people like me to because they're so surprised? I didn't even know that the Vietnamese food would be like this.
None. It's case by case. What they do enjoy is watching, for me, what people tell me they enjoy the most is when they get to see them make it.
Sure. Okay.
And everything is pretty much made in front of you. Street food means not only something that is sold out of a cart on the street, but it also applies to the restaurants that are selling the food on the sidewalks, which is also almost all of the restaurants.
Okay.
If you're sitting in a little tiny red chair, then that qualifies as a street food restaurant.
Red plastic chair we're talking about here.
Occasionally a blue one, but yes, small red plastic chair is definitely, and that's also more common in the north than it is the south.
Got it.
In the south,
you've just described some of my favorite dinners around the world, but sitting in a little plastic chair, sometimes white, though. But
too tough to clean here.
Oh, got it. All right. Well, that makes sense. You were moving us on from the street food tour.
Yeah. So the street food tour, those would be definitely the three that are iconic for Vietnam: spring rolls, pho, and banh mi. And I'm probably one of the few people who did no research before I moved here. I knew nothing about it except for that there was a war here. Nothing. So I did not know what foods, but most people have some inkling, some suggestions a friend gave or they saw online. I had none. So in addition to the three iconic dishes, it would also include most likely anything that they heard they should try or wanted to try, right or wrong. Sometimes we steer, or encourage, and sometimes steer away from, and sometimes we encourage from what they heard. But for the most part, that's the main part of the menu. But you have people that have a sweet tooth and they want to try nothing but desserts, which is fine. So it's all customized. From the street food tour, usually it's at night, but again, because it can be done anytime, we can do breakfast, lunch, or dinner with that. The next day, we go into the half-day tour, Vespa tour of Hanoi.
Okay.
Sometimes they're motorbikes.
Okay.
But sometimes they're Vespas. Now,
I laugh because I've seen Vietnamese traffic.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially Ho Chi Minh's horrible. I sound like anti-Ho Chi Minh. I loved Ho Chi Minh. I really did. The traffic there is even worse. I leave my neighborhood and it is 8 lanes each way. It's all motorbikes, and it's 3 motorbikes per lane. So do the math. Some of them are 12 lanes. So I go from 8 lanes each direction to 12 lanes each direction. And that's just, it's not a highway. It's just a regular road near me. Yes, the traffic is crazy. The alternative is the Jeep tour, which is also a lot of fun. But it's just that. It's a tour of Hanoi and seeing the different sites where they are, and a tour while you're driving around.
And what are the must-see sites that we're going to see in our tour?
Definitely the Ho Chi Minh Mausoleum. If things are open, if the sites are open, whether it's a Temple of Literature or the mausoleum, if people want to see it, then we, again, focus on that and spend more time on less places and going into these places. Mm-hmm. But most of the tour allows for nights to be open and or to ship things around. So we start with the food tour and the sights of Hanoi so that you can start thinking if there's something that you would want to see more of.
And that's why I'm trying to see if I can get you to name the sites so I'll know more of what to choose when I get there. So you mentioned the mausoleum.
I mentioned the mausoleum, definitely pagodas and temples. I mentioned the Temple of Literature. We also go into Tayo, which is, we have all day, can take you around everywhere in Hanoi in a half day. Tayo is where the expats live, but it's also one of the nicer areas on the water. I'm not sure if you're trying to remember if you've been there or not.
No, I'm sorry. I was trying to figure out Temple of Literature. I still couldn't get past what a Temple of Literature might be.
It's not what I thought it was. I can tell you that. It is just that. It's a temple. It's based around the old literature, literally, in Hanoi. It's like an old school almost. And where they house some of the old literature. And they did do, and I think they still do, some education there. But it's not chock full of books like you would think by the name,
right?
Temple of Literature. It's not like that at all. It looks more like your traditional pagoda or temple. I read again today, a lot of people say, you've been to one pagoda or one temple, you've been to them all. I do understand that. There was a certain point where I felt it and I agreed with that. But they are all unique, and depending on your interests, I have a friend who's a school teacher who loves going to the Temple of Literature. It means more to him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's all relatable as to what you enjoy. But like I was saying, Tejo. And that to me is one of the most interesting in the fact that people enjoy it, because to me, it's where the expats live. To them, it's a beautiful part of the community. When people tour it, they think it's beautiful. So some of these are surprising to me, but some we leave in as options because they're well received. And Tejo is one of them. Tejo means west and lake. And it's the west part, it's West Lake, and it's where the Westerners live. The Tays. We are the Tays. We are the foreigners.
Okay.
Yes, you get to see the prison.
And when you say the prison, you mean the Hanoi Hilton?
Hanoi Hilton. The Hanoi Hilton. I talk about this like you are here or have been here, Chris.
I'm assuming that not everybody has been. So.
Your four listeners, like, why is he taking us to a prison? I'm definitely not a tour guide. I'm more of the arranger. I am partnered up with one of the top tour agencies, the guy who ran the tour agency, top one in Hanoi.
Well, and I don't even want to assume that everyone knows what, when I say Hanoi Hilton, I mean, we're talking about the Hau Lo prison, which held U.S. prisoners of war, is what we know it for here in the U.S. So it was one of the more infamous places where POWs were kept in the Great America War. Is that the Great American War? Isn't that the Vietnam name?
That's one of the three common names, yes. One is the Vietnamese American War. Oh, that's crazy. The stories of their Independence Day here is, they think it's Independence Day, independence from the U.S.
Which is odd.
But yeah, it's not true. And this was one of the first times I started understanding how different reality is from what you experience versus what you read about versus what they think. And that's actually what steered me carefully away from with my cookbook, was making a historical book, because there's a lot of misinformation out there and a lot of truths that are no longer truths. So there's a lot of debate. But yes, they all think Independence Day is from the U.S. Every generation, that's what they celebrate. If you ask them to Google it, it doesn't matter. That's their belief, and they're sticking with it regardless of if they find out it's otherwise.
And the date we're talking about is the date they were independent from France?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
The only person, not people, the only person who did not believe this was a Vietnamese friend who was schooled in France. And he understands what's happened, and he gets it, but that's not how the country works. The country is taught to believe it's in the schools. That is independence from the U.S. When lockdown started, Chris, I could not leave the country. And no one could come in, so I paused the business. But I started teaching. And unbeknownst to myself, I ended up with this platform to obtain information. I couldn't have been luckier. You would think I would be able to describe things better, like the prison. All this information. But I get to ask questions. I have at least 50 students at a time. So in a week, I'll have over 1,000 students. I have a question. I have this platform of 1,000 students in front of me. They're my sounding board for any discrepancies about why or when or where anything happened. But they really help me understand better about the country versus things that I understood through reading or hearing. But Independence Day is one of them. But yes, back to the prison. Again, there are certain sites that people want to see and spend time in, and that kind of changes their schedule, but the prison's one of them. I typically don't include in the tour Yuan Kiam Lake, which is a lake in the Old Quarter, but I think that is something that during free time, it's a place that should be explored, and that has the Red Bridge and another pagoda. I think those are just great places to go, and they're not tourist heavy. They are crowded, but they're crowded with locals. So you get to see what locals do for fun, where they go.
And I get the impression you're kind of wrapping up Hanoi and you're ready to take us out on some of those side trips you were mentioning.
side trips.
You said using Hanoi as a base, and we were going to go out to other places.
That was your segue for me to keep talking. So, yes. So after the Vespa tour, the next day is up to Sapa. For Sapa, the only way to get there is to drive. Some people cut corners, and I appreciate saving money, but the different ways to get up there are a bus, whether it be regular or overnight sleeping bus. You can take the train, or you can take a limousine van. You could drive also, or have a driver, or your motorbike. But the last two, I think there's no need for. But this is an area where, I don't know if you've been. Have you been on the trains before in Vietnam?
No, I haven't.
There's such a risk. There's such different levels. I know Amtrak. Amtrak has different lines. You know, some have a cafe car, some stop at every stop. But they're very forward with the differences. And with the trains here, they'll be called the same thing. The locals, they call them smelly or not smelly. Those are the two. So they just don't clean. It's too big of a risk. And I knew a friend who took a train, not a friend, it's someone who was a customer of the hotel. It was 36 hours he ended up being on the train because it was an hour and a half flight where he was going. 36 hours.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping is always curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So the trains are a risk. The ones to Sapa are pretty straightforward. They always take the same amount of time. But the price difference does not warrant taking a train when you can take a limo van. Those limo vans, they'll seat, say, 8 or 10. But they're nice, comfortable chairs. It's not a place to cut corners for a 5-hour drive. That is the way to get up there.
Well, and you mentioned Sapa, and we're going up. We're going north in the mountains now.
You're going north in the mountains towards the border of China. Mm-hmm. What Sapa is known for is the rice terraces. Mm-hmm. Here's a little caveat. If you expect to see what you see online in the pictures, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. I think any travel, when you expect to experience something, you're setting yourself up. And Sapa is one of those. So Sapa's season for the rice terraces is roughly July through September, October.
It's the season I'm going to find them green.
That's the season you'll see them green or yellow or changing colors. Mm-hmm. And during those months, you're pretty safe to get some color. Mm-hmm. The problem is if you start pushing your luck where you want to see the yellow, which is considered the creme de la creme for people visiting, all the ethnic villages harvest differently. One could harvest first week in October. The other one could do it the middle of September. It's up to them. It's up to their crops. So you may not see what you thought you would see, or you may get there when they are burning the crops.
Sure.
And that is a nightmare. It's like you're in a giant fireplace. It is smoky. It's
right.
It really, and I would never think of that. I would never. For me, it's easier. I can go whenever I want to Sapa. But if someone has 7 days, they're not wandering around the country, then I'd play it safe and stick to a window way before that yellow harvest or the yellow time.
Got it. And you mentioned the different ethnic villages. So we're up here with the Hmong people and with I don't know who else.
Yeah, yes. I am not as versed with the different ethnicities here. Again, as part of that history, there's so much different information out there. I read something online, but then when I actually experience it, it seems a little off. So I'm more into the culture aspect of it than I am the history of it, only because I find myself not confused, but I feel like if I get this information, then I'm passing on this information and I'm not completely convinced that it's accurate. And I experienced this firsthand in, I think it was Mycho, which is also outside of Hanoi, where I had read something about the ethnic tribes there. And when I got there, I was taught something completely different by the people that lived there. So, and I enjoyed every piece of information that I observed and learned while I was there. But it wasn't at all what I read. I wasn't going there to learn. I love learning about the culture, the history. I try to stay away from, but you know, and this was all by accident because I travel always with Vietnamese friends, always, everywhere, even to the store. And one of my friends goes, oh, they're from a different tribe because I can't understand them and they're too close to Hanoi. I should understand their language. So I also ask questions, unfortunately, everywhere I go. So that whole conversation started with the fact that I was experiencing something I didn't expect to, and that was learning about a tribe that was not supposed to be there according to what I read online. So I try to stay away from that. But I know there are different ethnic tribes in Sapa, and the Hmongs are one of the predominant ones. And that's Sapa. But I love Sapa. Sapa is just naturally beautiful.
So when we're in Sapa, we're seeing rice terraces, we're going for hikes. We've had that knee surgery behind us so that we're ready to do rice terraces, because you don't want to be doing rice terraces before the knee surgery.
It's the same thing I have on the itinerary. If someone said, can you send me an itinerary, I send them one with trekking in Sapa. But the reality is, and I do it, is taking the motorbike tour.
Okay.
I see so much more ground.
And rice terraces sound lovely, but they're strenuous.
They're strenuous. And a 5-hour hike or whatever it may be, depending on which path you're on, it's a lot of trekking. So I encourage, if you want to trek. If you want to do half and half, do half and half. I do all on the back of the motorbike with my Vietnamese friends. I enjoy pictures because they create memories. And I see more of it and I take more pictures. And the motorbiking can also, it's the same as the trekking. It can be as long as you want or as short as you want. You can do an all day back of the motorbike. I'm quite happy with a couple of hours, 3 hours on the back of the motorbike and using the rest of the time to go through town. But motorbiking for me versus trekking, some things if I feel like I can do at home, well, I live in Hanoi, but if I was still in the US, I can walk anywhere. I used to live in Charleston, South Carolina, and my friends were all tour guides. I understand that being a tour guide, the biggest part of it is not about the information or being honest about the information. It's about entertaining.
I think I went on that tour in Charleston, actually.
it's right. They talk about the slave market. There's no slave market, but it's about entertaining people. I work at a busy tourist restaurant. Our job was to make up stories. As a server, I was in culinary school, but we were to make up stories about, I don't want to give away too much information about where I work, but we had ghosts. So we used to make up stories about ghosts, but it's about entertaining people more than the information. That's probably also stuck in the back of my head whenever I hear information in Vietnam about history, is I understand this, you're getting it from online and a tour guide, and neither one really have a lot of credence to them. So with the, those tour guides in Charleston. So tours in general, I take it with a grain of salt. It's about being entertained, and wherever you are, I still recommend doing tours. I still think they can be informative, and they are.
You were mentioning spending some of the rest of your time in the village up there in Sapa, in one of the villages, whatever. What am I going to see that's different because I'm in the village? It's a very different culture at that point.
It is a different culture, and it is touristy. Mm-hmm. But what they sell, whether it be some sort of jewelry or clothes, it's grown from, meaning it's their style or what they wear or the colors they wear. Mm-hmm. From their tribes. So you'll see things that they would or could, or you see them actually doing it, clothing, jewelry, materials for, tapestries for, mm-hmm. to make things. Again, with any souvenir, you have to buy it, just understanding that it's a memory. Mm-hmm. Not that they actually made it, not that they didn't make it, whatever it may be. It's, you have to buy it and use it just like you would a photo. You're contributing to their society, you're helping them out financially, and you're giving yourself a memory. I know people love to haggle, and that's part of the game. It absolutely is part of the game. They expect it, and people want to do it. But do not tell me how poor they are and then tell me that you haggled. Do not use those two facts in the same story. Don't tell me how poor they are and how you took advantage of them and paid them less than what they were asking. It's a good way to contribute to their finances. It doesn't mean to be taken advantage of. But be careful when you word things. Yes, I got a great deal. But I do understand, and I experienced this. I did not even start traveling until I had my passport when I actually left the state. But I had a crash course in how things work. I was in Turkey at one of the pottery places. I was traveling by myself, so I got to wander off and see things that people did not see. And I saw all the pottery that was brought in from China. I went in there, I opened the box. I was like, I've done retail before. I recognize these boxes. I opened them, and they were the boxes. It was the pottery on the shelves, made in China. So I get that. And we're at a place that is supposedly making the pottery in Turkey. And it's across the board. But you have to understand that you're buying it as a souvenir. You're not mm-hmm. buying it as an investment that you're going to sell it on some auction show in 10 years to make $1 million. It's just a memory. It may not be real.
Excellent.
Meaning they didn't make it.
Well, I'm going to move you along. Where are we going to go next?
After you get back from Sapa, the next place I would recommend, I hear some people for it and some against it, is Ha Long Bay.
Okay.
I love Ha Long Bay. Ha Long Bay is definitely one of the busiest places. There's hundreds of boats in this bay, and it's a bay full of limestone, essentially mountains, peeking out of the water, almost 1,000 or 1,000 of them. It's just beautiful. It is touristy. And it is sure. super crowded, but it's super crowded for a reason, and that is because it's so pretty. So you have to acknowledge that, yes, there might be hundreds of other boats there, but mm-hmm. you have to tune them out. I lived, like I said, in New York. I did not understand, and no New Yorker goes to Times Square. We just don't. We never go to Times Square. But I ended up working somewhere near Times Square, in pretty much in Times Square, Bryant Park. And I would get out late at night, and it wasn't until then, when there's no people around, that I finally enjoyed, after maybe 15 years of living in New York, I appreciated Times Square with no crowd. So it was just the crowds I didn't like. Times Square, I got it. People don't have those tall buildings. They don't have all those lights in their downtown area.
Are there any tricks to How Long Bay to get that experience of, is there a season you can go to get fewer boats, or is there a boat COVID. That goes to different places, or?
COVID. Gets them all away.
Short of pandemic, is there a trick that we can
pandemic?
Use?
Another pandemic run here.
Let's try and avoid that one.
I've had some great cruises on that water during the pandemic. Lanha Bay is one of them, and it has less than Ha Long Bay. But honestly, okay, they're all pretty similar, and there are different paths you can take. But the reality is, you're going to be out there. There may be 100 boats on your tour. No matter which one you're on, the slow one or the busy one, you're still going to have probably at least 12 around you, if not 20 around you at any given okay. point. So I think they're all similar. I try to steer people more towards, again, a little money goes a long way. So I put more money into having a nicer boat.
Okay.
And
this isn't like the train where there's the smelly boat and the non-smelly boat, is there?
The bad boats are bad, Chris. Bad.
Okay.
Bad. No, when you hear a complaint about a bad boat, it's usually a really bad complaint. Like the staff, we could do a whole episode of just things not to do. There's the bad boats. Your vegetarian meal might be, and has been, a piece of bread and a cucumber. Or you hear people complaining about how they had no curtain or anything to block anything, no privacy in their room. So people walking by could see them at all.
And we're talking about a cruise overnight.
Overnight, always yeah. overnight. The mm-hmm. the day cruises are more party cruises. So it's a lot of typically people that stay in hostels or locals who are just out there drinking all day. I would definitely do at least 2 days for this situation, for this itinerary. I would do a 2 day, one night on Ha Long Bay. And I would do a 5-star cruise with a terrace, because you can just sit on your terrace. You can leave your room just for the meal, which is going to be spectacular. But you can just sit on your terrace without anyone bothering you, and just enjoy Ha Long Bay for what it is. You may see 6 other boats in your view, but you don't hear them screaming or partying. They're just in your view. And I think it adds to the view.
They're really part of the scenery. Yeah. Okay.
Part of the scenery. And I enjoy that, because I think it's part of it.
You mentioned the cruise, and that sometimes the service is not exceptional on some of the poorer boats. One of the things that I have heard, and more so about Northern Vietnam than Southern Vietnam even, is that the service economy, I don't necessarily get service with a smile. And I don't know if that's true, and I don't know if that's still true.
In Hanoi or in Vietnam?
In Hanoi, in Northern Vietnam.
Well, there's the South is more westernized.
Right.
Which is, besides the heat, I didn't like it because there was less culture. I felt like I was in a cheap version of New York. So without that, yes, they have different hospitality standards, without a doubt.
Is
they
that changing as it becomes more tourist focused? No, okay.
No, but I don't think it's really bad.
Okay. It's just different.
I think that, so again, here's the 5-star doesn't necessarily mean anything, whether it be the boat or the hotel.
Okay.
Yes, there's a standard that you should follow, and that if someone wants to, the government will tell you these are the qualifications you must meet, but no one checks on it. So you can really call yourself anything you okay. want, which is why I think using a travel agency is better, because they only work with boats or hotels that they actually know. If it was a hotel you book online, even on booking.com, you can say you're 4-star. It doesn't mean anything. You can say it, but you don't have to be. You don't have to show proof that you're 4-star.
So it's not like when I go to France and I say it's a 2-star, 3-star, or whatever. Those are government monitored whether I really meet those criteria. And here
they're
it's
probably
more,
stricter there.
Yeah. Correct. Okay. Interesting.
We have that here.
Well, we said that you do VietnamTravelWithUs.com. We didn't say that before the pandemic you also ran a hotel and ran a hostel.
Ran
so
a hostel.
You know a little bit about the hospitality industry here in Hanoi, we should say.
I know a lot about it. Yeah. I know a lot about it.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you the question, because...
Yes. So yes, with the boats, that's why with the service, I think it's good service on the five-star. Would it be the same service as going to a five-star restaurant or a Michelin-star restaurant in the States? Probably not.
Okay.
Do they serve from the correct side? No. Do they?
I laugh, but I'm sure that there are people that is important to. I don't happen to be in that crowd. Having a door rather than a curtain at all in my room, that I care about. Am I on the smelly train versus the non-smelly train? That I care about. Okay.
And people don't know about it. Yeah.
And I've been on the smelly train, so I can picture what you were saying when you were saying that.
And some of these things I'm taken aback by when my Vietnamese friends tell me. They're like, yeah, it's either going to be a smelly train or not smelly train. And this is where the questions and even the students can help me with, because they know how to figure things out. They're Vietnamese. We don't.
Well, and when you said smelly train, for instance, I pictured a night train in China where the toilet facilities was a hole in the floor, literally.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I've could see it. The tracks. And it was smelly, you know? Because you're on a moving train and AIM is what it is. So let's stop there.
it's a big risk if you don't have someone looking after your interests. Mm-hmm. Because, again, if there's 200 boats and just say 40 of them are lying, well, obviously the travel agencies are booking up the ones that are reliable, that
sure.
they know, that they work with. So the ones that are lowering their prices at the end of the day, the ones that still have room, are the ones that are most likely not good or just changed hands. Changing names is very common here. Hotels, boats, cabs, change a name when they mess up. It's very easy to do.
When I'm up in that area, is there other things that I want to do on the way to or while I'm up there besides the boat cruise?
Not really. Okay. That's about it. Halong City is also pretty westernized.
Okay.
And there's not a lot offered, not a downtown area to walk around. So you couldn't even really do a half day or part of a day in Halong. Halong really is strictly Halong Bay. It's the cruise. It's the sights.
Okay.
It's really just about taking in Mother Nature, which is why I really encourage a nice boat with a balcony so that you can just relax. And you know, you haven't had a really chance to decompress.
Right.
If you're on a 7-day itinerary and you hit the ground running, 5-hour drive to Sapa, 5-hour drive back, this is also a little downtime. It's a downtime with great, beautiful scenery.
Well, and I'm getting the sense with your 7-day itinerary, that's kind of all we're going to be able to fit is those three sites, those three spots.
No, you still have time for, but there's more. You still have time for Ninh Binh.
Okay.
In Ninh Binh, some people call it Halong Bay on land. Again, if you think that Halong Bay can be peaceful from your terrace, Ninh Binh can be even more peaceful. Ninh Binh is my getaway weekend spot in Hanoi, and there's nothing I enjoy more. They take you on boat rides. They row you through this mountainous area, and some of them are through a lily pond or lily field. They're all different types and different paths, and every time it's just, to me, it's magical, and it's peaceful is the key word. It's peaceful and beautiful, and it's a getaway. I love it there, but you can still do a day trip there. It's an hour and a half drive. Again, you can take a private car or you can take a limo bus. And that'd be the last part of your 7-day itinerary. So now, it would all be beautiful. It would all be nature.
Yep.
Everything in the north would be nature, except for when you drive around and you decide what you want to see or spend more time at in Hanoi.
Now, I know that 7 days is constraining. And you would prefer that people stay a little longer. If I had 10 days, what would we add to that?
Immediately fly to Hoi An, Da Nang.
Okay.
Immediately. Hoi An always gets rated as number one. Have you been to Hoi An?
No.
Chris? Hoi An, it's beautiful. But you've been to Charleston. So it's akin to that in the sense that it's well-preserved historic buildings.
UNESCO Charleston, World Heritage Site, yeah.
Charleston is, with the colors they use, the rainbow colors, Hoi An uses that ubiquitous yellow color throughout. So it's just a well-preserved two- and three-story buildings. It has the architecture of Japanese, Chinese, Vietnamese, French, like most of the Vietnam, but it wasn't ruined by the war. There's not a lot to do. You can go on a coracle boat ride. Those are the round boats made from young bamboo. You can do that through the coconut forest. You can do another Vespa tour through the rice fields, which I actually think is a great tour. But the food is not as good.
Okay.
The food is definitely...
When we're now in central, that central
region.
We're
now in central Vietnam, Hoi An and Da Nang. Da Nang has a great beach. It is extremely, I don't know the length of it, but it is wide and long, and Vietnamese never go on the beach in the daytime. So it's like you have a beach to yourself. All the man-made items are there. Lady Buddha, Marble Mountain, which is a cave up in the mountains.
And Vietnamese never go on the beach in the daytime because they don't want to tan.
They don't want to tan.
Okay.
They don't want to tan. So at sundown, the place is so packed you can't even walk. Packed. And in the mornings. But more so the second at sundown, the beaches and the water, it's too full. I've never seen it anywhere like this. The beaches are just jam-packed with people. Daytime, not a soul. Not a soul. And that's very rare. I'm not used to that in the States. But it's also nice having Lady Buddha in the background. So it's just a nice, empty, big beach, again, with some scenery. But Hoi An is just pretty. But it's also crowded. So it's got the Times Square crowds in Charleston, essentially. That's how I describe it, because it is super crowded. And these places, everyone loves Hoi An, but it's very touristy. You'll find Irish bars there.
Don't you find Irish bars anywhere you go around the world?
I don't know if we have them.
My wife claims that is her experience, that everywhere we go, she finds some Irish pub.
There might be a reason for that. But it's very touristy, and the food is, again, they gear it towards a tourist. So it's expensive. It's not as good. You would go there just because it's a cute, quaint area. Lots of people. But I'd still recommend it because it is pretty. And people love it for that reason. So you may want to go to Paris and see the Eiffel Tower. You know all you're going to do is see it and walk away, but you saw it. And that's kind of what Hoi An is. Hoi An also has the Golden Hand Bridge, which is that hand. The bridge leads to nowhere. It's just a walking bridge. You spend a half a day getting to it, and you go there, you take your pictures, and you leave. But that's part of it. People want to see what they want to see.
And I'm not sure that everybody has a picture of this. You described it, but it might need
not
a little
clearly.
More work. In a bridge being held up by two gigantic hands. So when you say a hand bridge, that is what it is.
I told you my descriptions are not very flowery. Yeah, it is.
Everybody who had been there and everybody who's seen a picture of it knew exactly where you were.
Yeah, it's these two giant hands holding a footbridge. I think it's made out of wire, and I don't even think it's concrete. I forget the material. But yes, it looks like
apparently steel painted gold is what I'm reading.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw gold, but the bridge itself might be. The hand is bluish.
Yeah.
But yes, they look like it's two giant hands holding up a bridge. I also steer clear typically of anything that only shows aerial photographs, because I'll never see that. I'll never be in the air looking at it.
I completely understand. I love drone photography, but I'm never going to have that view. In some ways, it's a little bit of a lie. I love the drone photography, but that is not what it's going to look like when I'm there. Yeah.
You're not going to see that. Correct. Yeah. So that's what this is. But I did the same thing. Everyone told me, don't go, don't waste your time. I saw it because I wanted to see what everyone else was talking about. And now I talk about it just like that. I say, it's a half day. You'll spend 5 minutes up there taking pictures and you'll leave. And you won't get the same pictures that you see online. And it's super crowded. So good luck getting a good shot of it because it's that crowded. But a lot of tourist places are like this.
Sure.
You know, that's why a lot of them, you go up, you got sunrise to try and beat the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is, and you want to see what you want to see.
Excellent.
Understandable. But yes, I would include Central Vietnam if I added on any days to a 7-day itinerary.
Paul, is there anything else that people need to know before they head to Northern Vietnam, before we get to some of our wrap-up questions?
Anything else? I would definitely find a way to work in time. I'm a foodie. I'm actually a trained chef. I think the food here is amazing. So if there was time to build in extra time to try the foods.
Is there any particular restaurant you would send people to in Hanoi?
There is not.
Okay.
There is not. I do have a list of places, but it really, like for me, I have snail soup at this place down the street from where I live. Every time I take a trip, because I think anytime you take a trip, I have the ritual of going to eating the best food that you can before the trip. Just a tradition I have. For me, it's the snail soup. I would never be able to even describe in a million years how you would find me. Because the mail system can't even find me. It's not like I'm in some obscure part of Hanoi. It's just...
One advantage of the food tour is follow the person who knows how to get to the place.
If you say what you want. But yeah, if you come here, I'll happily pin where I am. And you can come find, you can try the snail restaurant. It's by far my favorite, obviously, because I go, before every trip, I have a bowl of that. That's my favorite meal in Hanoi, is the snail soup here.
Excellent. Well, let's do some of our wrap-up questions. And you were standing in the prettiest spot in Northern Vietnam. Where are you standing?
Where is it?
And what are you looking at? It doesn't sound like it's the hand bridge. And anyway, that's central.
It's not the hand bridge. It's not the hand bridge. Obviously, I like Ha Long Bay.
Yeah.
I go back to the peace and tranquility a lot because Hanoi is a loud city. I moved here from New York, so nothing should be loud to me. But
More chickens where you are now than in New York.
Chickens. There are a lot of chickens. I like the Red Bridge, too, in Wan Kiem Lake in the Old Quarter. It's nothing that unique, but I think it has a pretty backdrop with the lake and the temple.
Okay. And that's the one you were saying you don't usually include on a tour, but you recommend that people get there in the off hours.
Yes. There's a lot. Everything in Central is man-made. But the Red Bridge, there's a Dragon Bridge in Central Vietnam too. But the Red Bridge is a simple Red Bridge. So I wouldn't go there expecting to see a lot. But it means a lot to me because it really is the center of Hanoi. And it's iconic. It's iconic.
Excellent.
It doesn't take a 2-hour drive. It's just there. You can just sit there and relax.
One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Northern Vietnam.
Only in Northern Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
That one's kind of tricky, Chris. Can't just be only in Vietnam. Only in Northern Vietnam because they have chickens everywhere. Northern Vietnam. Got to help me out, Chris. Throw me a bone.
If we expanded it to Vietnam, what would you say?
I'm surprised they don't use soap. I'm surprised they don't use soap.
Tell me more, he says, somewhat terrified.
I come from a place, again, I have a culinary background.
Right.
So I am used to, you know, food must be kept between 40 and 140 degrees,
sure.
No more than 4 hours, etc. It's ingrained. I wash my hands after I touch anything. Not that I'm crazy. It's just in hospitality, you get used to it. Here, they use limes. They use limes or kumquats add it. They'll squeeze one in the water, and that's how they wash your dishes. Huh. Don't get grossed out by it. I actually saw a show, I wasn't even looking for it, and it showed under a microscope dishes, things that have been cleaned with soap and all different types of cleaning chemicals. and had lime in there. And lime actually does surprisingly kill the majority of bacteria. Hmm. But yeah, if you go to any roadside, any street food vendor, you will see a bucket set up with water that will probably have a couple of kumquats floating there. And that's what they essentially rinse it off. And that's it. Chris, in Charleston, this restaurant, one of the restaurants I worked at, that's still around. So this place has been there probably 50 years. Now I definitely can't say its name. We didn't wash, we didn't use hot water or soap. And when we needed, say,
and
spoon,
I'm definitely, after we start recording, going to ask you the name of the restaurant.
We would, so I waited tables during culinary school, and if we needed a spoon for someone's coffee, we didn't even bother going through the charade of taking it to the kitchen to be washed, because we knew it didn't get washed. So we would just take it and wipe it on our sleeve and give it to the customer behind their back. Of course, we would turn around. But that used to be my story for years. One of many stories from this restaurant about how they didn't clean, didn't use hot water, and didn't use soap. They would rinse silverware off back into the dining room. That was it. And that was my story for years. And
then you moved to Vietnam.
And then I moved to Vietnam and go, oh, well, at least Vietnam uses limes. Limes do kill bacteria.
Right.
And I've never once had a stomach issue. Never. And I did leave with a bunch of Imodium when I left the States because people just recommended it. And I always recommend that, period, because different regulations in different countries. You're very fortunate you don't realize what the regulations do to you in the U.S., or how they help you. But never once have I had any issue. But that's how they clean. And I was surprised that that's how they clean.
Yes.
You can't. And my first tour in Vietnam was also a food tour. And I ended up with some people who said, oh, I understand you wipe the chopsticks. That's what you do before you start eating. And I was thinking, why would you do that? You know, of course, I'm the arrogant guy from the U.S. You don't have to do that. But I understand where that comes from. You are wiping, and you do. You wipe your chopsticks before you eat to try to help clean it a little bit more. And you also will pour tea into your glass, like a little, if you're getting tea yourself, which is common, you'll pour a little bit of tea in there and swirl it around and throw it out. Same. Hmm. You're kind of giving it one last chance of being clean.
Interesting. And Paul, if you had to summarize Northern Vietnam in just three words, what three words were you going to pick?
Beautiful.
Okay.
Colorful.
Excellent.
And cultural.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Paul B. Kennedy from VietnamTravelWithUs.com. Paul, you say you don't have any posts over there we can go to, but if we're interested in getting some help planning our trip to Northern Vietnam, we've got a connection now. So that, and we can find out where the snail soup is if we contact Paul. So
yes, and I do have tidbits on my cookbook's not out, but there are some fun cultural tidbits on my other, on PaulBKennedy.com.
Excellent. That's, well, yeah, we didn't mention PaulBKennedy.com, but the reason why we're putting the B in there is so you'll know about Paul's cookbook site. So very good.
It's not out, but I'm talking more about culture. I want you to learn about the culture. I want you to travel. That's it.
And Paul, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Vietnam.
Chris, thank you for having me.
Normally, I think the listeners of the show who are patrons of the show right now, and I'll do that a little bit. But first, there's a change coming for Amateur Traveler that I want you to be aware of. For most of you, this won't make a difference at all, but we will for some. So I announced almost 3 years ago that I was changing the show format to be an MP3 enhanced version instead of doing the old AAC version. And the reason for that was I wanted to insert ads in older episodes. Most of the downloads in any given month for Amateur Traveler are for older episodes, for which I make absolutely no money. It doesn't help support my family at all. And so this has been a very slow process, but that is coming. Sometime in June, there'll start to be ads in older episodes of Amateur Traveler. If you download the show when it comes out and you grab the latest version and you keep it around for whenever you want to go to whatever place we're talking about, this will make no difference to you at all. If you download really old versions of the show, it also won't make any difference at all. But there's that in between when you may get ads inserted on episodes. And the problem with that is it will cause the chapters in an episode to go away. Chapters and inserted ads are incompatible. So again, if you download them right away, not a problem. If you're a patron of the show and get the ad-free version, not a problem. If you don't care that there are chapters in the show with pictures and links and you never use those, not a problem. But for those of you who do use the chapters and you get them from older episodes, you might want to download a few episodes before you go, or you could always become a patron of the show and get access to those episodes. But I did want to let you know that change is coming in June. And again, if you want to be a patron of the show and get that ad-free version and also help support Amateur Traveler, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see